Mark Dapin has always had a fascination with writing about violence, either sanctioned violence, war and the army, or unsanctioned, that of criminals and prisons. Actually, that when you think about it, these are two themes that ran parallel in his childhood growing up in Leeds in Thatcherite Britain. The true crime journalist is taking these passions into the classroom, teaching budding true crime writers the tricks of the trade at the Melbourne Writers' Festival. Mark, welcome to you.
Hi, how are you?
You and your family always sort of assumed that you'd be a writer. You obviously showed great talent as a kid. What sort of things were you writing about? Were you writing about monster trucks like I was when I was 10?
No, well, I still haven't got my driving licence, so vehicles were never my thing, really. Or I was never theirs. I wrote science fiction, I think, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Time travel, escapism, and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Is that any reflection on Leeds in the 80s? I do remember that when Thatcher passed away in 2013, you said, but the country was never Thatcher's Britain. She was Britain's Thatcher. What did you mean by that?
I've no idea. That column, I keep getting it quoted back to me and I don't even remember writing it. But also, I didn't really grow up in Leeds. I was born in Leeds. I grew up in a place called Aldershot, which is a garrison town in the southeast of England.
Okay.
And there was the fascination with violence that you spoke about. I think what I was really fascinated by, or am still fascinated by, is all-male societies, like the army and like most jails. I'm interested in the way they work, and they do work with the implicit threat of violence, if not actual regular outbreaks of it. And Aldershot, as I say, was an army town in the sense there's a garrison tagged on to the sort of periphery of the town centre, but it was also an army town in the sense that the army more or less owned it socially. Like, there were pubs that were just army pubs, and there were pubs that were just airborne pubs, just for the parachute regiment. So civilians were frightened to go into army pubs, and other soldiers were frightened to go into airborne pubs. And school was a bit like a jail as well. I went to a state school, but it was one of the few all-boys schools because it was so old-fashioned and useless.
So when it comes to this obsession or fascination with all-male or traditionally male-dominated topics, you've also got authority in this mix as well. And you also, in your writing, make room for the softer side as well, remembering your friend Graham, who was very ill. Is that sort of striking a balance there, the idea that masculinity can be both tender and tough?
More that narrative can be both tender and tough, more undercutting horror with affection and horror with humour. It's not really a statement about the way people are, but I guess if you write as close to the truth as you can get, then that is saying something about the way you are or the way your subjects are. It's not like I'm only interested in all-male societies, although I concede it's a theme. I am interested in transgressive behaviour as well. I am interested in why criminals commit crime and then how they react to the situation of authority they find themselves in jails.
In fact, that was some of the research that went into your books, Carnage and Public Enemies. When it comes to the prison system, have you spent much time visiting in prison to kind of get the authenticity? I don't want to presume that you've got a criminal record, but have you been there as a day trader, you might say?
Quite recently, in fact, 10 days ago, I spent a couple of days in Broken Hill Correctional Centre, and I've been in Long Bay as a journalist, and I've been in Juvie in Canberra as a journalist. And I have been arrested and spent a night in a police cell back in the day.
Just for a bit of colour.
Just be research.
So when it comes to observing the prison system, what do you think true crime authors or any kind of fiction writers get wrong about prison?
I think it's probably not as violent a place as people imagine. I think there's not the level of sexual violence and sexual threat in men's jails as people imagine. I think people don't realise perhaps how incredibly boring it is for the inmates and the corrections officers. I mean, all people do in jail, as far as I can see, it pretty much is walk up and down. And they haven't even got that great a distance to walk up and down. So they walk a short distance, telling someone a story, and then they turn around and continue the story, walking the short distance back. Problem with a lot of people in jail is that they haven't really done a lot to tell stories about, apart from being other jails. So it's just It's a problem, I guess, if you're the audience. But if you're the storyteller, you hone your story. You work it so many times. You know, your audience changes because people get released, other people come in, people get transferred. You understand what bits of the story works the first 150 times you tell it, walking up and down the yard. And by the time you leave, you know, you're often a pretty good raconteur. And, you know, excellent material to be interviewed by true crime writers.
Well, like any industry, I think if any dramatisations of hospitals, there's a lot of boredom in that. Yeah. Dramatisations of journalism, there's a lot of boredom and tedium in that job as well. So, you know, the art, I think, is knocking out the boring bits without losing the authenticity. If you just join me on RN Drive, author Mark Dappin is with me. We're discussing his work. And you can learn a thing or two at the Melbourne Writers Festival when he gives a few workshops. So I'll give you those details in just a moment. Do you subscribe to this theory that all good true crime has to have a series of elements? Because that sounds a bit reductive to me, this idea that there is a certain set list of ingredients to get your final true crime cake.
Well, if I might talk about my last book, Carnage, my most recent crime book, that came to me. I didn't kind of approach it with an idea of how I might write it or even what the story might be. A bloke rang me up when I was getting on a bus to Canberra, in fact. Unimportant detail.
For authenticity. I know you're not lying. Good.
And he said, my boy, I understand that you're writing a book about prison escapes. And I said, yeah. And he said, you must include my own custodial antics or some such. And I was like, who are you? Why are you calling me?
Was he wearing a top hat and a moustache? It sounds like he was something like out of the 1800s.
He does, and quite deliberately so. He's like Oliver Reed playing Henry VIII. Not that I believe Henry VIII was in the 1800s before you ring in. It turned out that he was Jack Carlson, a guy I'd never heard of, but is well known on the internet for a meme known variously as Democracy Manifest.
A succulent Chinese meal, indeed.
Yeah, and it was him on the phone. Like, I'd never seen the meme. I'd never seen the thing on the internet. I'd never heard of Jack. But he performed exactly as he does in that little clip on YouTube. And he has escaped from jail. Yeah, he says three times. I suspect he's escaped from custody a good many more times than that. And, you know, there is a theory that he's still on the run now. Anyway, so Jack said, I've finished the book. That's how come you've heard about it, you know. And Jack said, well, you must come and visit me anyway, my boy. You must come and see me in my home between Gatton and Esk. And I'd never heard of Gatton or Esk, so I didn't know where he lived. But it's in Queensland. I went up there. He starts telling me the story of his various escapes. And then kind of midway through, he says, and then, of course, my wife got murdered. And that's when I realised who he was. That's when I realised Jack Carlson was the husband of a woman called Eve Carlson, whose murder was the first in a series of Melbourne gangland killings in the late 1970s, early 80s. So I had no idea how the book was going to progress. I had no idea what elements might be in it. Particularly, I had no idea who could possibly be the hero. But in the end, I decided the hero was me. Through my tireless investigation of this case. And also because other people kept turning out to be quite unpleasant. So no, I mean, I do not, you know, have a bunch of elements and then try and fit them together like dominoes. Certainly in that case, I just waited to see what would happen and was continually surprised.
Keeps it exciting if you don't even know where it's going next.
Well, there is that as well.
I want to ask you, I had a look at some kind of popular thought about some axioms about true crime writing. And look, this is from the internet, so who knows? But look, I thought I'd put them to you to see what you think, whether there's some skerrick of truth and value in this advice. One, the story you are telling has to be true.
I agree.
Okay.
Holy. I don't think you can invent any detail apart from there's an argument that you can make for blurring the identity of informants if it puts them in danger. I did that once in the book.
You can't forget humour.
I mean, I think that with all writing and criminals are often quite funny people because they've honed their jokes, you know. They know what works. They speak to an audience, so you can, you know, steal those jokes from them.
The last one, and I think you've sort of already answered this, is you can't write true crime without acknowledging the truth about yourself. I don't know if the answer to that is, well, you're the hero, but is that true?
Oh,
because,
Andy,
you know, if you're spending all of this time ideating how criminals can commit the deeds they do, then some part of you has to admit that you could perhaps do that as well.
The last book led me to a series of coroner's inquest files. When I first looked at that, they're in Melbourne, and I couldn't get down to the public records office during the pandemic. So I asked someone in Melbourne to copy the files for me of the inquests of, I think, six of these people who were murdered in this killing spree. And it was fascinating, you know. I like to read court transcripts. I'm really interested in the way working class, certainly the criminal working class, if that's the right word, spoke back in the day. I'm interested in the way cops speak. I'm interested in the way that cops make up things that criminals didn't say, which was a huge part of criminal court cases back in the day. And I love words. The person who copied them for me asked me if I wanted to see the crime scene photographs, and I said, no, what's the point? I knew I couldn't use them, and I didn't imagine they'd be particularly interesting. Ones I've seen before are like people measuring stuff and cars. They like to take a lot of pictures of cars. But when I went back after the pandemic just to check nothing had been missed, I looked at the murder scene pictures of four of the victims, and they're just... It disgusted me. And they'd made it look like a party. There was beer cans around a naked corpse. And I thought to myself, you know, you get one chance at being alive, and this is how you choose to use it, doing this. And no, I didn't think, oh, yeah, maybe I could have done that, because I couldn't have.
Maybe it's true that we are the monsters, as they say. We are the monsters. Mark, absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for dropping in. You can catch Mark Dappin at his Melbourne Writers Festival workshop on Saturday, May 11. Tickets are available right now online at the Melbourne Writers Festival, mwf.com.au. Great to see you.
Thanks ever so much.
You've been listening to a podcast of The Drawing Room with me, Andy Park. For more great conversations, search for The Drawing Room on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.